When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
That's with my colleague Anatole Levin. Anatole, we have a presidential contest the world knows too much of. These last weeks, they'll be slugging it out, and right now the polls indicate nobody knows who's going to win. However, on the matter of Ukraine, we've spoken of the storm shadows. I'm particularly interested in the opinion of the United Kingdom, the population, and the possibility of either Harris or Trump being the president-elect, and will that change the nature of the war in Europe, especially because we have unknowns on Harris's side. We can presume that there'll be some continuation of the Biden doctrine, but we don't know. And on Trump's side, there's a lot of talk. So Harris first. Does Harris enjoy a good profile in the United Kingdom, our strong ally in NATO? Is this a positive for her to win as far as the British electorate and the Commons is concerned?
Oh, undoubtedly. I mean, certainly the Labour government, but I think it's fair to say the great majority of the British establishment and European establishments, because she represents continuity first, whereas Trump represents at least the possibility of radical change. But also because, you know, Harris is a much more well, I mean, not exactly herself popular because people don't know her, but what she represents is much closer to the European and British mainstream than Trump. Trump, of course, is absolutely detested on the centre-left and among liberals in Europe and among a good many conservatives as well. Of course, he has a particularly bad reputation in Germany. The Germans absolutely dread the idea that Trump's ambassador, or, you know, political appointee Rick Grenell, could be appointed Secretary of State, because he made himself bitterly unpopular in Germany. So, yes, I mean, essentially, the great majority of people are rooting for Harris. But it's also, of course, in the particular case of Britain, because, you know, if Britain went ahead with these storm shadow strikes and Trump came in, and then, I mean, who knows what Trump would do if he wins. But if he came in and cancelled that and really tried for a compromise peace with Russia, it would leave Britain and the special relationship with America, the so-called special relationship, looking extremely silly. You know, Britain would really have gone out on a limb and then been hung out to dry. And of course, that would be very humiliating, not just for the Starmer government, but really for, you know, the entire British establishment. So, of course, they favor Harris.
Harris would be presumably a continuation of the Biden policy, which at this point we could say that there's no end date to the Biden policy. Is that correct? Is that how it's perceived in London? No end date?
Yeah, I mean, that is it. But it seems that they would prefer to go on and on with no end date in the hope of something that they don't appear really to be able to define, even to themselves, than risk a radical break that could, you know, damage the British-American relationship.
May I presume then that the Kremlin is also planning on continuing indefinitely? Is that what the 180,000 call up that they were announcing means? They're not going to mobilize, but they're not going to back off.
Well, they're not going to surrender. As I say, how much they want, I mean, Trump basically wants the whole of the four provinces. I mean, this is what he said, that Russia is annexed, plus Treaty of Neutrality. And, I mean, we don't know exactly what this means, limited demilitarization. And I think, I mean, since he said that, and since this is certainly what the great majority of Russians want, he would settle for that. But on the other hand, as I was told in Moscow, if the Ukrainians collapse completely, and it seems that now Western militaries are afraid that this could happen, then, of course, he might well try to take much more. But anyway, that is where... That's what the Kremlin wants at present. So, in other words, it does seem, if the Ukrainians can fall back, you know, only slowly, you know, position by position, then it would appear that, Putin does not think that Russia can conquer almost, let alone all of Ukraine, and subjugate it and turn it into a client state. So from that point of view, the Ukrainians have won. I mean, they won in the first months of the war by defeating that Russian ambition. But of course, it wouldn't mean that Ukraine has to give up the territories that Russia has taken, because it's lost them already, and militarily speaking, can't get them back. And nobody, including in Russia, is seriously expecting that Ukraine or anyone else, including the Chinese and the Indians and South Africans, will legally recognize these annexations. But Ukraine would basically have to agree to a ceasefire. And, you know, then the issue of sovereignty would be, as in Cyprus, left for endless future negotiations.
Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, no end in sight. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.